Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is the Nintendo Show, episode 45, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the episode, the official show for, what month are we in, June?
Yeah.
For June 2014. So on the official show, we talk about some of the news that's been going around. We're going to have some new games to talk about, which is fun.
Ooh.
We're going to preview the month of July, which will take 5 minutes.
Yep.
And the GBA corner.
Ooh.
The first one ever.
We're doing the Ooh.
Oh yeah, we're starting, because the GBA came out 13 years ago this month on the 11th, which means in Jewish culture, the GBA is now a man.
Aww. This kid drink GBA.
Yep. So, let's kick things off with some of the news and gossip. Mostly gossip, because we've already talked about E3, and there hasn't been really any other big announcements outside of E3. So, some of the gossip that's been going around, Platinum is interested in continuing the Bayonetta series on Nintendo systems.
Good for them.
Yeah, which is surprising, considering Bayonetta 2 has not come out yet, so they have no idea how well it's going to sell. I think they have some idea.
Yeah.
How well it's going to sell. Which I think it'll do fine, but not great.
Yeah.
I think it has the potential over a long period of time to be a big seller. But, you know, it's definitely a different type of game than normally shows up on
Nintendo
system.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
So it'll be an interesting little novelty, which, you know, may be able to move some units based on that alone. It's definitely not the type of game I normally play.
Outside of a shot?
Yeah, I probably am.
Because
there's nothing else really coming out that month as far as big retail games, so I'll probably give it a shot for that. And, you know, you get Bayonetta 1 and 2 for the price of one game, so...
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, double up on that. But, yeah, it's... And it's interesting that, you know, they're just go ahead and throw it out there that if Bayonetta was going to continue, they'd want to do it on Nintendo platforms. Maybe just kind of as an act of gratitude for Nintendo saving that series. Also, in some other gossip related to, like, third-person action games, that game Devil's Third is originally planned on a trilogy. We'll see if that ever actually happens. Have you watched anything about this game, Devil's Third?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's a game that it kind of got stuck in limbo for a while because it was announced a while back, and during E3 it was announced as coming to Wii U as an exclusive. It's from Itagaki, who was the former kind of head of Team Ninja of Tecmo Koei, and he responsible for a lot of the Ninja Gaiden stuff, a lot of Dead or Alive, and the guy, I hope he listens, because he's such a fucking tool, this guy, and I don't know, just like he's got this attitude that, you know, he's too cool to be in the room. Whenever I've seen him do interviews, he's always really disinterested, and maybe that's kind of affecting my judgment of the game, but I've watched a little bit of Devil's Third, and it looks like shit. It looks like a big steaming pile of turd.
Well, serves him right.
Yeah, maybe. You know, I don't plan on buying it. There would have to be a pretty big game drought around its release in order for me to give it a shot. If there was a demo, I might give it a shot. But Bayonetta looks interesting enough for me to try something that I don't normally play. Devil's Third does not. So the idea that this game would be a trilogy, I don't care. But that's just how slow the news is. But I'm bringing up Devil's Third. In some other gossip, Anuma, the director of the Zelda series, did make a comment that we might be seeing more of the non-single-player aspects of the Zelda Wii U game next year.
Huh.
And it's interesting that he phrases it like that, because he didn't directly say multiplayer, just non-single player.
So what, like NPCs coming in? Or...
I don't know. I have no idea what that could possibly mean. Maybe it's like a sort of diminished cooperative thing. Like, you know how in Super Mario Galaxy the one player could control the little reticule and collect star bits?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's something similar to that. Or maybe like it'll be like the Wind Waker sections where you have to have the little bird girl go with you through the dungeon. Maybe there'll be a dungeon like that where you have a side character.
Or it'd be like Monty Python, the weird guy standing behind you clocking coconuts together while you're making galloping motions.
There's like a coconut accessory for the Wii U.
You betcha.
I'd buy it.
Yeah,
I wonder if it'd be compatible with bongos. Of course, it'd have to be really roundabout because you'd have to get the GameCube multi-tap adapter, plug it into your Wii U, and then plug your bongos into that.
Well, you know, that's how Nintendo makes more money. It's a marketing scheme, John.
Market those 8-year-old bongo controllers that nobody uses anymore.
Well, I don't understand why we don't have a pair. Why do we not own bongos?
You know, every time, like, because there was a time where I would walk into GameStop, and there was, like, the Donkey Kong Jungle Beat with the bongos bundle for, like, $15 or $20. That's a steal.
How Jungle Beat is a cool game. How did you get that? Just for the bongos alone.
Because every time I walked in, Des was with me. And she was like, no, don't you get those bongos. Those are stupid. I'm like, they're not stupid there. I was like, no, don't get those bongos. And, you know, I was usually there for another game. So it was hard to say, like, well, I'm going to get this other game. And then I'm also going to buy these bongos. I didn't want to have that conversation. So I just always ignored the bongos and, like, looked at them longingly saying, I'll be back for you.
I wonder how many people walked into GameStop intending to buy a game, but I ended up walking out with a pair of bongos.
Yeah, it's a pretty small market.
Yeah.
So, and some other, this is actual news. Like, this is not just, you know, rumors and gossip, but in Japan, there was a downloadable cart, I believe it was free, in Mario Kart 8, but it was like a little Mercedes-Benz SUV. So you could drive like an actual car in Mario Kart. And that's coming to North America.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Yay.
If it's free, I'll probably give it a shot.
I don't care.
Yeah, well, it's just interesting. I guess the bigger thing about it is that it's interesting that Mario Kart's getting some sort of DLC, so maybe it'll keep it going, have new tracks and things like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll just be this car, and 20 years from now, I probably won't be thinking about this game, but 2 years from now, we'll be like, oh, I wonder if they were ever going to do more DLC.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anywho.
There are new characters confirmed for Hyrule Warriors. One is a brand new character called Lana. Looks like she uses some sort of magical attacks. And the other one is a character from the...
Please tell me Tingle. Please tell me Tingle.
It's not... Tingle's not confirmed yet.
Damn it!
I know, it's disappointing. You want to play co-op where you're Tingle and I'm whoever, who gives a fuck. You want to play as Tingle. But this is a character... You will never guess who it is.
All right, give me a second. Which game is he from?
She is from Twilight Princess.
From Twilight Princess.
Yep.
She from Twilight Princess. I feel like we should pause this because this may take me a minute to think.
This person is a good way to farm rupees.
Oh, don't do that shit to me.
There's trading involved.
There's trading. The bug chick?
The bug chick. The bug
what
chick
the hell?
Is going to be in Hyrule Warriors. And that's absurd. That is just delightfully
absurd.
She's so
minor. I never bothered with the bugs. I did a little bit if I just happened to be like, oh, I know this is over here. But I never actually, like, quested out all the bugs.
I bothered with the bugs because I'm a rabid completionist.
You are.
But the bugs were, actually, as long as we're taking this Twilight Princess side note, the bugs were a good way to farm rupees for repairing those bridges.
Oh, yeah.
That was, you know, another side quest, not super necessary.
Which I did a couple times, but I never actually ended up using the armor.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's really the end game of repairing all those bridges and getting that stuff, is then you just have access to that shop, which where you can buy the magical armor. And yeah, I never used it either. I think there might have been a couple of times where I used it in, like, some side dungeon stuff where you have to fight a bunch of the Iron Knuckles. But other than that, you know, it's not necessary to complete the game. It's not really all that helpful either.
No.
So, yeah. It's but I don't know what sort of attacks she will be doing. There's been really limited information surrounding her in Hyrule Warriors. Maybe she'll throw swarms of bees at you.
Well,
I don't
know.
Just... Sure.
Yeah.
But this game is actually shaping up to be really just, like, tremendously insane and awesome. I love just the insanity about this game. Because I don't know if we talked about this, but during E3, during one of the Treehouse live streams of this game, there was a point in the game where you could meet up with a great fairy who gave you a hookshot, and you use that hookshot to hookshot the moon, drag it down, and it's the Majora's Mask moon, and smash the dragon from Twilight Princess in the face with it. That's insane.
That's
crazy.
That's amazing.
Yes. And that alone, like, I think I was going to purchase the game before. I was interested enough in it to give it a shot, but that just made it a must-buy.
Yeah, like, right there, just, damn it.
I can hookshot the moon and smash a dragon with it.
Done.
So, speaking of some Zelda stuff, the developer that remade Ocarina of Time 3D for the 3DS had a job posting that hints at a Majora's Mask remake. Basically, it was a job posting, and one of the taglines or descriptions in it was, would you like to make a legend with us? And, that kind of hints like a Legend of Zelda kind of thing, and they remade Ocarina of Time. I'm not really sure what they're up to right now.
Yeah, but I want them to release it for the 3DS.
I'd prefer a Wii U version as well, but they're already doing the new Zelda for Wii U. I don't know. I think this is happening. I think it's going to be for 3DS.
Damn it.
Yeah, you know, it's disappointing, but, you know, it's still cool. Like, Congratulations, you get a yellow cake for your birthday as opposed to a chocolate cake. I mean, you're still getting cake. So shut the fuck up.
Yellow cake?
You know, it's just like the standard, yeah, yellow
oh,
cake.
Oh, yeah, that yellow, okay.
Yeah. It's not vanilla, it's
not yellow.
Yeah, it's where a color is a flavor in this instance. like purple drink.
Racist.
What? Hey, that was not racist. I didn't say purple drank. That was not racist.
Right, now racist.
That would have, yes. If I had said that, that would have been extremely racist. And the last bit of news from this particular month. Well, we got a couple of release dates for some Wii U eShop stuff that we'll talk a little bit more in detail a little bit later in the show. Guacamelee is coming to the Wii U on July 2nd, and... Shoot, I always forget how to pronounce this next thing. Let me flip my notes really quick. Armillo is coming to the Wii U eShop on July 3rd. So I got some back-to-back games right there. But before we get into those, let's talk about some games that came out in June.
Ooh.
But first, music.
Ooh. June.
Yes,
June. Hit me with it.
Tamagotchi Life came out in the 3DS for $40.
Ooh.
I did not buy it. That's the one that we've talked about before, where you put your Miis into like this society together and they interact, and you can take all like the Miis you've created, like if you have like celebrity Miis, like Dr. Zoidberg or E.T., and then they can talk with other Miis and become friends with them and have relationships with them. Your Miis can get married. It's kind of been described as an aquarium for your Miis because there's not much game to it. They're pretty much just like, it's like Tamagotchi, where you pretty much feed them and watch them.
Do you have to clean up after they poop?
Not as far as I know. Because
that would be weird, because they look like regular people. I'd be like, trying to take care of a village of elderly people. That's just, like, messed up.
Well, I definitely do not want Javier Bardem to watch me clean up his poop. Because I'm pretty sure he'd stare at me the whole time. I think the fun of this game comes in just, like, watching them do all this weird, fucked up shit. Because when you enter them into the game, when you basically, like, recruit a Mii from your Mii Plaza into the game, you can set them up with a personality. And that personality defines the parameters of what they're going to be doing throughout the game.
What kind of range in the personality? Are we talking about, like, calm, collective, to homicidal murder?
Well, this is Nintendo we're talking about, so I don't think it'll go as far as homicidal murder. But there's probably some pretty crazy stuff that they will do. I know, and one of the big things I'm hearing about the game, which I'm sure there's videos up on YouTube, so... if you get a chance, just like Google search Tamagotchi Life Me Dreams, because your Mii's can go to sleep and you can watch their dreams, and they
That's
dream of like crazy stuff, like a hamburger eating a frog or shit like that. This game definitely shows just how unhinged some people at Nintendo must be, because there's some weird stuff. There's definitely some weird stuff going on here.
All right, then.
But that's why we love them. Because I'm not going to play this game. But I just like the weird shit of dreams about bananas masturbating to pictures of B. Arthur. That's definitely not in it. And hookshotting the moon and smashing a dragon with it. Like, that's the kind of weird shit I like to see.
B. Arthur, really?
I'm pretty sure, is she dead?
I think
she might be dead. That would make it even weirder. Anyway, so the game that I've been spending the most time with this month, and the new games anyway, that came out this month, is 1001 Spikes, which is an eShop game on both the 3DS and the Wii U. I have the Wii U version. It's $10, came out on June 3rd. And this is a game that is a lot of trial and error. It is a 2D NES style platformer, but like the name would imply, there's a lot of
spikes,
a lot of hazards throughout these levels. The levels are all really short. They don't take more than a minute and a half to beat, but you're dying a lot. At the beginning of the game, they give you 1,001 lives, and there are six stages, each with about five levels to them. And at the end of each stage, they give you like 30 or 40 more lives just to replenish you. But there's definitely a lot of dying going on. You can die 20 or 30 or more times on each particular stage if you're not being really careful. So they do things like there are like pressure-sensitive spikes, where if you step on a particular tile or platform, they'll like shoot up and impale you if you don't move away quick enough. They mess around with environments a lot. There's like fire stages where fire rains down from you and you have to work your timing with that. There are things that shoot fireballs or spikes at you. And pretty much your only mechanics for being able to move the game is you have your jump button, and then you have a second jump button. One's a short jump, one is a long or high jump. I'm not quite sure why they mapped it to two buttons rather than just like doing a quick tap or just like a hold the button for a longer jump, but it is what it is. And you do eventually get used to the two different jumps. And then you have your knives that you can throw. And the knives you can use to take out enemies. There's little scorpions that crawl along the ground here and there. And also, if a statue shoots a spike at you, you could throw a knife at it really quick and, you know, eliminate the spike. And that comes in quite a bit in some of the mid game levels, where there are statues that kind of throw spikes at you based on timing. So you have to like be running in one direction, turn around, throw a knife, keep on running, turn around, throw a knife. And then at the other end of the corridor, there's another one that'll throw spikes at you, and then so you have to stop throwing them backwards and start throwing them forwards. It takes a lot of replaying levels before you finally get used to where the hazards are going to be, and eventually you do kind of get a sense for what they're going to throw at you. But every once in a while, there's some really fucked up, really cheap feeling shit that they'll do to you in the game. There's one particular level where there is a door at the end of every level. In order to open the door, you have to get a key, and the key is usually somewhere else in these pretty small levels. So there's one where you have to bounce up a series of three blocks, and the blocks are pressure sensitive but with fire, so if you stand on the block for too long, you get burned and you die. There's no health in the game, just one hit KO. The first and the third blocks are permanent fire. If you step on them, there's fire on them forever. So the second one, eventually the fire does go away. What you have to do is avoid the first one entirely, kind of hook jump your way around, land on the second one, and then jump up to the third one, up to the platform you need to be. Because in order to finish the level, you have to work your way around about down by the door, use the key to open the door, but that doesn't automatically get you through. So you use the key to open the door, but if you stand there, spikes will come up and impale you. So then you have to jump to the first fire block, which, pray to God, you haven't lit on fire, otherwise you're going to die, and then wait for the spikes to disappear, jump down and go through the door. So there's a little bit of that kind of stuff where the game, like, you can be doing really well on the level, but unless you've gotten to the end and realized that you've made a mistake, you don't know, like, you've been doing something wrong the whole time. And you can do this wrong thing like 5 or 6 times before you finally get to the end of the level and realize that was the wrong thing. And at that point, it's almost reflex, like where you're jumping, even though you might be jumping to a place that you need for later in the level. Anyway, it's that's one of my complaints about the game, the thing I just mentioned there. But overall, it's decently fun. None of the levels are so infuriatingly difficult that it makes me want to rage quit and throw the controller. There's a game that I'm going to be talking about in the mini show, because it didn't come out in June, it came out in May, that the final boss of the game is so infuriatingly difficult that I very nearly rage quit the game. I was fighting this final boss, and Dez was like sitting over like at the kitchen table or something, and I was yelling at the TV because the final boss is such a poor conceit for this particular game, because the game is based all around like slide block puzzles, and there's really clumsy combat, but of course the final boss is all combat, and it's really terrible combat. And as I was sitting on the couch, Dez was like, "All right, calm down." I was like, "Okay, if I don't beat this guy this time, I'm done. I'm finished with this game. I'm never playing it again." And I did beat him that time. So
good for you.
Yeah, but I really hate when bosses of games kind of are opposite to what the overall game is. Like if you have a game that's puzzle solving, and then the boss is all about just hacking away with a sword. It just doesn't, it feels out of place.
Yep.
Anyway, so 1001 Spikes, pretty good game. $10 on the eShop. Oh, you do burn through a lot of lives, but almost every level that I can think of offhand has opportunities for a 1-up. So there's a gold skull that you can collect. And as long as you know how to get to that gold skull, you pretty much have infinite tries. You can just keep on grabbing it every time you die, so your lives aren't diminishing. So, and you know, despite how difficult this game is, I guess I'm kind of good at it, even though I've died over 100 times, because I've watched videos of other people doing it. Like, if I finish a level, or if I'm having a hard time with a level, I'll watch a video of someone else playing it, and I like have 900 lives, and the person doing the video has like 750. And I was like, "Wow, you've died a ton of times, dude." I mean, I guess I have the advantage of like that guy showing me how to do the level, so I don't have to do as much experimenting. But still, 250 times more than me. Like, I feel good about that. The other game that I've spent a little bit of time on this month, actually I just downloaded today, is Shovel Knight, and that is out on the Wii U and 3DS eShop. Came out on the 26th, it's $15, and it's a retro-inspired platformer with a lot of influences from Mega Man and Super Mario Brothers and Legend of Zelda. Not the good one, Zelda 2 Adventure of Link.
Oh, that one. Well, that's just unfortunate.
Yeah, but really the heaviest influence that I've seen from Adventure of Link so far is the town that you go in. So Shovel Knight, like I mentioned, 2D action platformer. You are a knight. You have a shovel. You can jump. You can swing at enemies with your shovel at your melee attack. And then you can also do...
But why a shovel?
I don't know. Just because. This is a shovel.
It seems odd.
And it is odd. And they actually do kind of poke fun at it. Like, when you enter a village for the first time, there's a guy guarding the village, and he says, oh, you have to leave all your weapons here. Oh, wait, that's just a shovel. Never mind, you can come in. And then, like, in that same village, there's another knight walking around. You can talk to him, and it's like, oh, what is that, a shovel? Get yourself a real weapon. So they poke fun at it, and aside from just kind of, like, jabbing your shovel for a short-range attack, your primary attack is pretty much going to be your down sword technique with your shovel. So you jump in the air, you press down, you're thrusting your shovel down, you can hop on off of enemies or obstacles with that. It also does more damage than just a regular melee attack. And so far, I'm liking the game. I've finished the first two levels, and pretty good level design. There's a few different uses for the shovel aside from just melee attack. There's like a bunch of destructible walls that you can get through and get money, and you use money to buy power-ups and different secondary weapons, things like that. And there are also just like little piles of dirt lying on the ground that you can dig up with your shovel and get a lot of money that way. So far, the game is a really nice breath of fresh air because it is not difficult. It's got a really nice NES style, but it's not really as hard as a lot of other NES games. Also, one thing that really helps is that there are checkpoints. So if you die, you don't have to start the entire level over again. So one of the really cool things about this game as well, the Super Mario Bros. 3 influence, is that there's like an actual world map that you move on to, and like there's tracks that you move on to get to different spaces. And on this world map, you'll have like, you know, remember those Hammerhead Brother stages in Super Mario Bros. 3? There are enemies that pop up, and instead of just like fighting one enemy, you only have to like beat up the, or you only have to like get to the end of the stage. And there's a few enemies here and there, like a little skeleton got knocked into a pit and stuff like that. But really no big deal, but it's cool that these kind of things pop up. So it's a pretty cool little world map that you got. Like I mentioned, there's a town. The town, you can buy upgrades to your health or upgrades to kind of your MP, and your MP is how you use your secondary weapons. But yeah, I'm liking it so far. Like I said, I've only played through the first two stages. And actually, the first two stages were pretty different. One was just kind of like this really organic, grassy, foresty kind of area, and the second stage was a castle. So pretty good variety to the levels so far. And yeah, like I said, $15. This one is a really good one. I'm really liking it so far. And then the last one from the month of June is Pushmo World. Came out on the Wii U eShop on June 19th. This one's $10, and it's a continuation of the Pushmo series that was on 3DS, now it's on Wii U. And it's I've talked about this series a little bit in the past. It's one where you have to push and pull puzzle pieces or block pieces out of like a big scaling wall of pieces, and different color-coded ones will move differently.
It's kind of like Jenga.
Sure, kind of like Jenga, except things don't fall. In Crash Mode, things fall, but in Push Mode, things just kind of stay suspended. So if you pull a red piece, all of the red, there's one big red piece, and then there's like a big blue piece. You pull the red, all the reds will move out, and then you kind of have to adjust the blue to make yourself a staircase to get to the top. That's the goal.
Right.
Just, yeah, to get to the top. And yeah, it's I like Push Mode. I'm not done with either of the 3DS games yet, so I'm probably going to be holding off on this one for a little while. I'll get it eventually, just not a high priority. I want to finish some of these other games that I have, and there's one or two next month that I want to get. But let's finish up June games with some of the Virtual Console stuff. On the 3DS, got Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse, Super Dodgeball, and Double Dragon 2.
Super Dodgeball.
Yes.
That sounds...
Yeah, that's right. Exactly how it sounds. You know, yeah. If... But, you know, I think we've talked about this years and years ago. If they made, like, a Mario Dodgeball, I'd probably get it.
I probably would, too, for something like that, yeah. Because that'd be goofy and
Dry Bones would be in it. And Dry Bones, like, his, like, character skill is he could just respawn quicker than the others because he just puts himself back together.
Yeah.
Rather than having to sit out.
Yeah.
That, there you go. That's free, Nintendo.
You're
that's
welcome.
All yours.
You are welcome.
So, then the Wii U Virtual Console.
Is Dry Bones in Super Mario Kart? The new one?
No, sadly.
What?
No, Dry Bones is not in Mario Kart
8. They got rid of Dry Bones.
They got rid of Dry Bones.
Oh, that's fucking...
It's so sad. Yeah, he was my favorite character.
Man. I used to fight you for Dry Bones.
Yeah. I kind of like Locky 2, though.
Lucky Two.
Yeah, he's the guy who sits up in the cloud and throws spike balls down at you.
Yeah.
For some reason, he's in the game, even though he looks really similar to a Koopa rather than Dry Bones, who is a skeleton version of Koopa.
I like what was it,
Ludwig von Koopa.
Yep. That's gonna be my guy.
He's all yours.
The crazy hair.
So on the Wii U Virtual Console, we got Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse, Super Dodgeball. Sound familiar so far?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Also, Pac-Man Land, Pac-Man Collection, the NES game Soccer.
Ooh!
And The Legend of Zelda Minish Cap.
Ooh, okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, and that's the one right there.
That's the one right on the Wii?
On the Wii U Virtual Console.
So you can play Minish Cap on a console.
Yes,
that's pretty cool.
You can play Minish Cap on a console without having to use the Game Boy Advance player.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's one that I'm tempted to get, but I got other things that are high priority right now.
Yeah, and you play Indie Beat Minish Cap like 20 times, so I mean.
Yeah, well, like 19, but yeah.
Well, then you have to buy it so you can round it out to 20.
No, I'm okay with 19. I try to beat every game in prime numbers. So... anyway, let's take a break and move on to games from July. So there are two games coming out in July, both I've mentioned earlier on the show. They're both coming out at the beginning of July as well. So, you know, July's going to be a pretty low month, pretty down month, which is okay because there's lots of stuff that I need to finish. Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition is coming to the Wii U
What the hell?
Yes, it's a action platformer game developed by Dreambox Studio. And it is one where you play as this Mexican luchador, and you run around and you beat people up. It looks a lot like a brawler. It
sounds very stereotypical.
I suppose. But I don't know, how many Mexican luchador games have you played?
I don't know, but still.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It seems stereotypical, but when you think about it, like
is he a giant avocado?
Not that I'm aware.
Okay.
No, he's a person. He's
all
a
right.
human.
All right. Well, yeah.
It'd be cool if he beat up avocados.
Yeah, and make guacamole.
Yeah.
And the guacamole.
Yeah, and that's your power up.
Yeah.
It's your spinach.
Yeah. Basically. Well, you know.
Yeah, he's
that's the, not, yeah,
okay. The Mexican Popeye. This is a very roundabout
yeah,
way
this is
to get you to make this something racist somehow.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of my goal every show to at least say something racist.
That's kind of the running theme of this show, is that racism isn't funny. It's not funny. This is the lesson we can get out of this. So, this Guacamelee has an open world Metroid style of exploration where there's different places you can go on the maps, but you're not able to access everything until you get to power-ups as you go. The nice thing, though, is that it gives you a really detailed map layout, and it tells you how many little secrets or collectibles are there and what percentage you've gotten already. And that's nice for the obsessive completionist in all of us. All right, maybe just me. This new edition, because this game came out on the PS3 and Vita.
Really? They're still making games for that?
Several months back. Well, several months back.
Oh, okay.
And now it's coming out across a bunch of different platforms, including the Wii U. And As a new edition, and this new edition includes like all of the DLC they had for previous versions. It has a couple new like levels and bosses. So yeah, this game looks really cool. It's got a really quirky style to it. Oh, there's a co-op for the entire like main game, which is cool, because it's a little bit disappointing when like games are marketed as having co-op and just like a little side mode.
Yeah.
Which I was listening to a bunch of our older podcasts, because I'm very vain. And
well, the first step is admitting.
Yeah, well, I don't care. So, and we were talking about like how we were excited for co-op in Pikmin 3 and Wonderful 101 and these games, and it turns out like that the co-op was not for the main story of the game. And like on other podcasts, we were always disappointed by like okay, well yeah, the co-op is fine for these side modes, but I wanted it for the main game.
Yep.
So I'm always happy when I can get confirmation that there's co-op for the main game before it comes out. So the game, it's going to be $15. Seems pretty legit. And I think between this and Shovel Knight, those are probably going to be my main games throughout the first half of the month of July anyway, because neither of them are super long. Like, I'm hearing that Shovel Knight is like a 6 or 7 hour game, and Guacamelee maybe a little bit longer than that. So, you know, some nice, brisk games to kind of cleanse my palate of games like 1001 Spikes, and I might as well say the name of the other game that I've been playing. It'll Do. It's called It'll Do. This is a game I was talking about before with the really bad final boss. I was kind of dancing around it before. I'm not sure why. I should have just said the name of the game. Oh, and Mario Kart 8. Mario Kart 8, I've been trying to 3-star the 100cc cups, and that was also just getting infuriating, because there was a stretch of time where I was just getting like 3 or 4 races in a row, I was just getting bombarded by shells. Like, blue shell, red shell. Oh, no, someone hit me with a green shell. Great. Thanks. Now I'm in 8th. So, the other game coming out in July that we know of is called Armillo. And I'm not sure if this is Armillo or Armillo, because I don't know if it's supposed to be like a Spanish pronunciation. I mean, the character is an armadillo, which is why I'm leaning towards Armillo.
Armillo armadillo?
Yeah.
They're so clever.
Yeah.
I mean, dear God.
I don't know. I mean, this game comes...
They should write movies.
This game comes to the Wii U on July 3rd, the day after Guacamelee, and it's a 3D... platformer, kind of.
With an armadillo.
Yeah, where you're an armadillo. It's developed by Fuzzy Wuzzy Games. I don't know, it seems alright. The weird thing is that it's described as a platformer, but I don't see a whole lot of platforming going on in these 3D sections. The game has two sections. There's 3D sections where you're on this big spherical world, like in Mario Galaxy, and it seems like most of the time you're just rolling around in like a little Sonic the Hedgehog style ball, and you're following like these track paths throughout the level, and collecting different things, like, I don't know, you like grab something and it destructs a barrier down another path, so now you're able to go down that way. Nothing really looks super interesting about that particular segment of the game. Like, when you're not on these track paths, you seem to be in these slightly more open arenas where you can run into enemies of, I guess, that's supposed to be your combat. But I don't know, everything's just really vague about this game right now. Then the other section are these 2D timed sections where, you know, you're actually doing platforming, like jumping, which is really basic to platforming that I haven't seen them do in the 3D sections of the trailers that I've watched. But there are things that go on, like there are like blocks that slide around and fall that you have to manipulate your way through. There are blocks that rotate that you have to work your way across. There are things that you can grab which makes the level rotate 90 degrees, which like lets you to proceed onto different sections. So the 2D sections do look all right, but I don't know, those sections where you're in 3D and just kind of rolling around the sphere, that does not look very compelling at all. So, I don't know. This game, I'm going to keep it kind of in the back of my mind, maybe for when the release of games is a lot slower, even slower than it is now. But this game, unless it's super, super cheap, I don't see myself ever, you know, I don't ever plan on paying $10 for this thing. Maybe if it went down to $5 at some point, or if it comes out at $5. So, you know, those are... Like I mentioned, Guacamelee, Shovel Knight, those are probably going to be my main games that I'm playing through July. Also, I'm going to start trying to 3-star the 150cc cups in Mario Kart 8 because I hate myself.
Apparently.
Also, I'm getting back into Wonderful 101. Again,
you're
probably because I hate myself.
You're a brave soul.
Because that game...
I still find it entertaining.
Me too, but the learning curve is so steep on it. Like, I'm hoping... There are 9 like operations, which are basically like your missions. There are 9 of them. I've beaten the first one. So I'm going to try... I'm slowly working my way through it. I'm just going to try to do a couple of operations every month or so, and maybe by the end of the year, get through the whole thing. The learning curve is so steep on that one. It requires a lot of experimentation, and I remember in the demo, and I might have mentioned this on a podcast a while back, probably a year back, around the time the game came out. In the demo, you have that block ability where you turn into like a little jello mold. Do you remember that?
Yep.
And it's key for beating up those tank mini bosses because you have to bounce them back away from you. In the actual game, you don't start with that block ability, and like the first operation is exactly the same as it is in the demo, and it doesn't tell you that you don't have it, and it doesn't also tell you how to buy it. So I played through a good portion of the first operation, got to one of those tanks. I kind of know how to beat this guy. I'll just use my block. And I'm tapping the trigger. Shit, where's my block? Why am I not blocking? I'm about to die. So that kind of thing, you know, I have no shame. I might just open up a guide and like before every operation and see, like, it'd be really sweet if I could find a guide like saying these are the abilities that you want to have in this particular mission and just take those with me, because, you know, it's if the game's not going to spell it out for me, you know, like I just want to have a good time with the game. I don't want it to try to teach me things. I just want to beat people up as really flamboyant superheroes.
Yep,
that's all I want. So
at the end of the day, isn't that what we all want, John?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Then, I don't know, as long as we're kind of on this rambling subject here, the last thing that I might do this month is I might pick up a new 3DS game. Well, it's not new. It's about 3 years old now, Tales of the Abyss. I might be able to get that one cheap. And it might be a pretty cool little RPG. I don't know. Depends on how my funds are looking and how much time these other games are taking up. And you...
And me.
You're going to be playing Shin Megami Tensei 4.
You betcha.
Yes. I'm excited.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
It is really good. I'm excited for you.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
Come back with our first ever GBA Corner. Did we do a DS Corner when we first started these podcasts, or did we wait a little bit into it before we started doing that?
I don't know. I can't even remember how, like, episode 1 went. Do we still have that somewhere?
Sure do.
I need to listen to episode 1 again.
No, my vanity will not let me delete it. And actually, it's really fun to go back and listen to the first few episodes.
Wait, did you delete any of the episodes?
No.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't delete them.
No, I have them all. But if I remember correctly... When we first, we didn't do it when we first started the podcast, but the DS Corner, when it was first conceived, what we did is we just picked games that were semi-related to stuff that was coming out. Like, we would pick a game that that we recommend playing, and then a game that we don't recommend playing.
And then, oh, yeah!
And that kind of turned into just a game that we recommend playing. And then that turned into, fuck it, we're just doing this chronologically. We're talking about them all.
Because I like that. Why did we stop doing that?
The DS corner?
Yeah, what was it? It was like, buy it, play it, kill it, or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. It just got to be too many games trying to play at one time.
Yeah.
And DS games, a lot of them have quite a bit of depth to them, so they're just too much to play. And
too much to do.
Yeah, and it was getting to the point where there were 4 and 5 games coming out every month. Could not keep up. So the GBA corner, I think, is going to go a little bit better, because at the most there are 3, and I think there might be a couple instances where we talk about 4 games in one particular month, but we don't have to do that because the GBA will often have a bit more breaks where there's like a month or two where there's nothing coming out. Mm-hmm. So there's a pretty good steady stream of stuff, but you know, we don't have to talk about it like entirely chronologically. We can treat it more like the Super Nintendo show, where it's semi-chronological. And like these 4 games came out in May, but there's nothing in June, so we'll just break these up between May and June.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, and that'll make that'll make it a little bit easier. And then one day, 4 years from now, when the DS corner comes back up, when we are rich and don't have to have jobs, we can just play DS games all day because people will pay us to do podcasting.
I like how you just shook your head at me. Give me that look.
That's never going to happen.
You know, this is a podcast, John. The viewers can't actually view us.
That's all right. They don't need to know. I'm editing all that out. I'm not. So, the GBA corner, we are going to be talking about GBA games semi-chronologically.
Let's do this.
So, the GBA was Nintendo's 32-bit handheld system that was released on June 11th, 2001 in North America.
You should teach the history of video games.
I should.
Yep. You could be a teacher.
Maybe I'll just like teach video game appreciation, where your homework is go and play a game that's not Call of Duty, you little shits. If anyone mentions Minecraft in my class, they fail.
What's wrong with Minecraft?
Nothing. I just picked a game that's really popular.
It's really good. That's why it's popular, John.
I don't know. I mean,
you never played Minecraft. You haven't given it a chance.
I'm not saying that I'm unwilling to give it a chance. I'm just saying that
Minecraft's not your kind of game.
The most popular games are probably not always the best.
True.
Anyway, so the original GBA, you remember it, not the SP, the long form one.
Yeah, it was this small little guy. It was very similar to a regular Game Boy in the sense of you need to sit by a lamp.
Yes, you do. You sure do. Very poor lighting issues. Terrible.
The sole little lights you can attach to it.
Yeah, like the little worm lights. Yeah. They're like snake lights.
Those are so cool. You remember 1 year your brother really wanted a snake light?
A couple years in a row.
That was really weird.
He's a weird kid.
Yeah, I just want a snake light. I'm like, why? You know? For light. Like, why?
You know, there is a big light in the sky. It's called the sun. It's there all the time.
When it goes away, we have lights in the ceiling. It's going to be okay.
It's a pretty good system we have set up where we always have light coming from above. It's really the ideal position for it. Except in a video game console where the light should be coming from the back.
How about a house where the light is under, like your floor is some kind of clear plastic and the light is under it?
That's absurd.
So you're walking on the lights coming from below?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I'm sure there's engineering issues to that.
I think that'd be so cool.
Sure. Well, one day, when we're rich from podcasting, you can build your house with a bottom-lit floor. That seems like such a homeless man idea. Like, this is what homeless men dream their houses will be like one day. I'm going to have lights all around my floor and my name across the ceiling. When my ship comes in. Anyway, so the terrible backlight issues of the GBA was not solved until like March 2003, I believe, is when the SP came out. So it was almost 2 years that people had to deal with this.
But the downside with the SP is it was small and yes. your hands were real numb after like 10 minutes of playing.
Yeah, it's very compact. Like it has that clamshell design to where you could close it up, but yeah, the buttons are really close together.
Yeah, it was rough. I couldn't really get by with that.
Yeah. So I really like the comfort of the Game Boy Advance, but the SP, like you have to have the SP. Otherwise you need a fucking snake light.
Yeah.
To bring it back around to that. So the GBA sold 80 plus million worldwide, which is impressive because it was replaced so early in its life cycle. Like the GBA launched in mid 2001. The DS came out in late 2004. So when the DS came out, it wasn't like conceived as the successor for the GBA, but within a year and a half, the GBA was on its way out. It had a pretty solid lineup up through 2006. It was officially discontinued in 2008, but after 2006, like there was only garbage coming out. It was like mostly licensed shit. So the DS, the one thing that the DS did do to kind of help prolong the GBA lifecycle was it had a GBA slot. The DS Lite had a GBA slot as well. And actually, I never owned my own GBA. I didn't really get into handheld games until the DS, but I played on the Game Boy Color. I played a few pocket games. I play like the Pokemons and I play like the Zelda Oracle games, that kind of stuff. But the DS GBA slot was one of my most used features for that system for the first year that it was out. I played Fire Emblem for the first time, the GBA games on the DS, and I think like Sacred Stones came out in like 2005, so after the DS was already out. But the first Fire Emblem I played for the first time on a DS, Minish Cap came out after the DS. I played that one on a DS rather than a GBA. Metroid Fusion I went back and got on the GBA cartridge, played that on a DS. So the GBA had a really solid lineup of a lot of diverse games, and it's actually, I feel, a really important piece of hardware for the really hardcore Nintendo fans.
But, you know, I always wanted a micro GBA.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, they're super awesome.
Do you remember, I'm kind of blanking on the hardware, but do you know, is there a little I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? A dongle for, like, to put it on a keychain? That kind of thing?
Oh, on the micro? Cool.
That would be cool, because I remember, like, seeing
but
some mock-ups.
At the same time, I don't want to, like, swing it around on my keys.
Sure, you can scratch it up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the micro is a really cool little piece of hardware, which is the opposite to how they treat their hardware now, because now they make everything bigger. There's the DSi XL, the 3DS XL, which is awesome. But I really liked the micro when it was announced, because it's a GBA.
I'm really sad I never got one. Because I think that would have been just a wonderful thing to have.
Yeah, one day. One thing we should also mention about the different iterations of hardware, the SP and the micro had rechargeable batteries. The GBA used two AA's.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, even at the time, was quite a bit retro to use AA's. And Nintendo continued to use AA's for different pieces of hardware up until the Wii U, because the Wii remotes use AA batteries.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
But they do sell rechargeable batteries, because, you know, they just got to suck paying every little bit of money out of you.
Yeah, they do. Well, for a while, Nintendo didn't have any first-party stuff. It was all third-party rechargeable, like, Wii Remote stations, which I had, and I really liked it until, you know, it
completely,
because, you know, any battery only has a certain amount of charges until it just starts to degrade, and mine, it definitely did. So, one other thing that I have in my notes that I wanted to mention was that it was the first time Nintendo experimented with handheld-to-console connectivity. So you had games like Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles and Four Swords, and Wind Waker had some GBA connectivity with the Tingle Tuner. And it seems like a really good idea, except, you know, with the GBA and the GameCube, you had to have that tether, the wire that kept you tethered to the console. And it wasn't a very long wire either, And, you know, if you were to do something like that now, like if we were to get three or four people together and try to play a round of Crystal Chronicles, all there with GBAs and tethers, we'd all like be sitting shoulder to shoulder, 4 feet away from the GameCube, like all like crowded together on one couch. And then, you know, whoever has to carry the bucket, you know, we have to call the bucket bitch. Because you can't do anything else when you're carrying the bucket. But, you know, it's something that I always wish that they would do with, like, the DS and the Wii or the 3DS and the Wii U, because you're no longer tethered to the console. You can do it all wirelessly. Hmm. And it's a really cool idea to have those as extra controllers for multiplayer stuff where, you know, you have, like, the extra buttons that you wouldn't have in a controller. And, well, actually, now you would, because now they have the same amount of buttons. But anyway, it'd still be cool.
Yeah.
Lots of Super Nintendo ports on the GBA.
Yep. Lots of good ones.
Yeah, and mostly good ones. Also, there were the classic NES series on the GBA, and I was looking at a list of games, and I didn't actually realize that all those classic NES games, like the Zeldas for the NES, Super Mario Brothers, Excitebike, Ice Climber, which doesn't belong in a classic series anywhere, Castlevania, they all came out in 2004. They all came out the same year. I thought that was interesting. And it was such a racket, too, because they were charging $20 for those cartridges, and they were like an NES ROM dumped onto the cartridge. It was probably so cheap to make. Anyway, but that was kind of the first time that I can think of that Nintendo was cashing in on their legacy stuff. Like, before that, they hadn't really repackaged NES games as they were, and were selling them to people. So on like the Super Nintendo, there was like the Super Mario All-Stars. That's one that comes to mind, but those were actually remakes of NES games, the NES Mario games. Other than that, I can't really think of a time where Nintendo was taking their older stuff, repackaging it, and reselling it. Now they do it on the Virtual Console. It's cool.
Yeah.
Because you're not paying $20 for a cartridge. So we're not going to get too deep into the launch games on this particular show because we're very nearly at the hour mark. Also, there are a few games worth mentioning that came out in June, but nothing worth mentioning that came out in July and August, so we're gonna break them up a little bit to give us some topics for the next couple of shows. But for kind of the launch month of the GBA, we had Iridian 3D, which is a space shooter game from Treasure, Sheenan, who made such games as Nano Stray and Nano Assault. That the most interesting thing about that game is that, according to Wikipedia, it came out in at the end of May of 2001. So before the GBA even went on sale, there's a game out for it, if we are to believe what we can learn on the internet. Also out for the launch of the GBA, Castlevania Circle of the Moon, which is an interesting game because I'm going to double check my facts on this one for the next show, but I'm pretty sure that Castlevania Circle of the Moon is non-canonical. So it doesn't fit into the Castlevania timeline unless they've updated something. Also, one of the launch games, F-Zero Maximum Velocity, which I'm hoping that you'll play, because I know how much you love
F-Zero. Yeah, that's
F-Zero
on
games.
The edge of my seat, John.
I know you are. So, also, Choo Choo Rocket, which I really don't know much about, other than it was a launch game, and shoot, I forget who developed it. I bought the cartridges already, I haven't plugged it in yet, but I don't know, I really don't know anything about the game, so we'll definitely have to get into more details about that after, you know, I've played it. So, and also there were a couple of Super Nintendo ports that came out near the launch of the GBA. Earthworm Jim.
They have an app for it.
They have an app for Choo Choo Rocket?
They have a Choo Choo Rocket app.
Oh, that's interesting.
Let's find it. I'm going to double check this. All right, do it. My Play Store.
But Earthworm Jim got ported over to the GBA from the Super Nintendo. And also, Nintendo did Super Mario Advance, which was Super Mario Bros. 2, which is Doki Doki Panic. And this is a series of ports that we'll be mentioning quite a bit throughout the life of the GBA Corner, the Super Mario Advance series, because what they did was they started bringing over Super Nintendo games, but rather than calling them that, they call it Super Mario Advance, because, like, Super Mario Advance 2, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is Super Mario Bros. 3. And it gets really confusing, because then Super Mario Advance 3 is Yoshi's Island, which is also Super Mario World 2. And it was titled like that. It was titled Super Mario Advance 3, Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island. So, yeah, it can sometimes get convoluted the way they name these things. But, you know, we got enough games to keep us going here till September. We might not talk too much about Earthworm Jim and Super Mario Advance because they're any Super Nintendo ports. We might not talk about the Super Nintendo ports as much as the original stuff on the GBA, but, you know, we'll at least mention that they exist and maybe have a word or two about them here and there. But that is going to bring this show to a close, unless you want to say something about this Choo Choo Rocket app.
It's... okay. This is kind of odd. What's a Choo Choo? It's a cute little mouse they're lost and need to get back to their rocket ship. Alright, that's a thing. It looks just like a puzzler. You're trying to get across the map and avoid various things. So this would be interesting.
Okay. Yeah. So...
99 cents.
Yeah, why not? Is it... can you tell if it's just a port or
I think
a,
it's just an app version of it.
Okay.
500 unique puzzles.
Oh. How fun.
So I don't know. I doubt it's a port. I mean, they're not going to port a game onto a...
Just kind of remake it or something?
I mean, the only time they do that... Well, they did that a couple times with, like, Final Fantasy III. I think they did that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Anyway, so that's going to bring this show to a close. Next week is going to be the Pokemon show, which me and Ryan are going to continue our Nuzlocke run, and that will be a discussion up until the 8th gym. So I've beaten the 8th gym, and without giving too much away, I'm starting to remember why I hated these games. But we'll get more into that next week. Until then, everybody.
So long! Take it easy.